America's very much about made in America, you know. I've had people say to me, "Do you guys have like, I'm not joking, I'm not embellishing. Do you guys have toilets in your houses in Australia? You know, do you build the same?" Like they don't think.
Hey everybody, I'm Evan Farmer, and welcome to Disaster Diaries. I'm here with my co-host, Andy, and we're here to interview people who have literally lost everything and survived to tell us how they rebuilt.
I'm Andy, and we're diving into the human side of disaster recovery, the grief, the grit, and the guts it takes to start over.
All right, so thanks for tuning in, and without further ado, let's jump into today's episode. Hey, if you shop at Home Depot, this is a no-brainer. Our free Build SOS program unlocks verified discounts, often up to 30%, plus access to exclusive deals on tools and materials. It is especially useful for contractors, handymen, and DIYers who buy regularly. No fees, no gimmicks, just better prices at checkout. All you have to do is click the link below or in the show notes that says Build SOS with Home Depot to start saving. Welcome to Disaster Diaries. I'm Evan Farmer. We talk a lot about destruction on our podcast. That's kind of our whole thing. But today, we're going to switch it up and talk about building. And we're going to learn how one company in Australia is doing things differently. So differently, in fact, that today's guest, Mick Faber, has me rethinking everything about my own rebuild. Well, welcome, Mick. And thank you for coming on our show here. Now, we're kind of changing gears, everybody out there listening to this right now. Typically, we have people on the show who have been through disasters, some recently, some just a couple of years back, and we kind of chronicle their experience going through it, what it was like, what they could have done, what they did right, all those types of things that, you know, everybody that's in the danger zone, which I think it's fair to say almost everybody in the world with climate being what it is now is in some form of danger zone, but something somebody can relate to and have a takeaway. But I like what we're doing here because we're coming at it from the angle of bringing in you, a professional who is on the front end of trying to help people prevent the disaster from happening in the first place through building technologies, more resilient planning, that sort of thing. Am I in the pocket there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we don't necessarily focus on that, but it's more and more of what we do. But I think it applies, you know, everywhere. My message to people is that if you've got to rebuild and you go through a disaster, rebuild efficiently and build a home that's efficient and sustainable and better for the environment. And I think that it uses less energy and creates healthier environments. That's my message. And we're doing quite a lot of work in locations where people are rebuilding. So
you're the founder of Green Homes, correct?
Correct, yep.
And you've been around doing this for how many years?
Just over 20 years now. So Green Homes was launched in 2004, 2005 after complete business disaster from a corporate perspective or business perspective.
What's the origin story there?
I was operating a regional building company and was really, really successful in the early 2000s. And the landscape, our competitor landscape changed. The town exploded with growth. So in came these national builders, the big guys, and just wiped the slate clean. Or the local guys just got pushed out of business, you know, and we were a builder that had won, you know, we'd done everything right. We'd won local business awards and we'd won industry awards. And, you know, we had trained salespeople and we sponsored soccer teams. And, you know, we did all of that stuff right. We were invested into the community. And I had this belief that was our value proposition. That formed part of our ethos of our business, which it still does, but it didn't protect us. The big guys came in and they just, even their homes were more expensive, same price, cheaper, didn't matter. You know, and we were doing, you know, we were training our people and I was following leadership stuff and, you know, like I just couldn't understand what was happening. And our business collapsed and so did many other local building businesses, local operators, mum and dad builders that just got just pushed out of the game. You know, you get to a point where it's like it no longer becomes viable to operate the business and deliver the service.
Mm-hmm.
You turn around and go, yeah. So the national builders come in, and whether they're playing by the rules or misleading consumers with false price indications, and you know, leaving stuff out that consumers don't know they need in projects, only to let them know later on after they've signed the project, and We didn't allow for carpet. We didn't allow for landscaping. We didn't allow for the approval stage. You didn't see that in the contract? No, we didn't write it in there. So that's you've got to do your own research. There's a note in the contract. Please get, please legally vet this contract. Like we told you, that sort of shenanigans that get played in this industry globally is very frustrating to compete with because, you've got to have a low integrity to be able to operate like that. And, do we shut up shop? Do we move to another location and start again? What do we do? What do we do? How do we put food on the table? At the time I had three young kids under five, it was a typical story. And a lot of the builders in our region just became contractors for the big guys. We've gone from 30 projects average to two. In the city that I live, there was a large development of lots of land opening up to cope with the growth of the city, the forecasted growth. So we bought two lots in that subdivision, and there was 15 other builders that bought lots in this subdivision for a show home street. It was we see it in America where there's the first streets show home builders, both sides, and we'll put the flags out the front and open up. And then there was another 1,000 lots being sold over the next 5 or 6 years. And every builder there was going to win their share of work. Anyway, we decided to build two show homes. And we went to a meeting. I was at a meeting on the street after the street was built and the lots were done. And the 15 other builders were there. We're having a meeting with the developer and the agent about, site access and so forth. And I remember standing there and it just hit me like a brick. It's like, right, there's 15 other guys here, 15 other companies. We're all going to build the same sort of home. It might look different. They're giving away free cars. To every one in 10 people are getting a free car. These guys are giving away a free trip to Hawaii for everyone that signs a contract. These guys over here are giving away $30,000 kitchen upgrades, which they're not giving away. They're just hiding it somewhere. We all know that, but people don't know that. There was all this stuff going on. And I thought, this is crazy. I can't compete with these people. My mother-in-law said to me, why don't you build something green? And I went, oh, no, I'm not going down that road. Like, they're expensive and difficult. And that was my perception. And what I found was that there was data showing that consumers were paying more for a sustainable home. And I thought, okay, there might be something in this. Long story short, we redesigned two homes after a fair bit of research and went down the green path. We built one as a display home and we put a family in the other one rent-free for a year, but we got all their data, so their energy data. They had to keep a log of their energy data, temperature, internal temperature, external temperatures, and so forth. So it was very analytic. Jump forward 12 months later, we'd signed 40-something contracts. When the display village opened, we had signage out the front, green homes. That was it. We didn't even register the name. It's like, how are we going to tell people what they are? They didn't look like, recycled glass box homes. So they weren't immediately identifiable as green homes. They fitted the streetscape, but they were super sustainable. Put a sign out the front, green homes. We got smashed. I thought, this is great. But a couple of things happened in that evolution of that, right? One is, I remember one of the other builders' salespeople coming in and saying to one of our guys, what are you guys giving away here? Are you getting all these people coming in? And like, we got to a point where we couldn't sign any more contracts. And then when we got the cost data in of the actual cost of the projects, after we eliminated or neutralized the upgrades that we had because it was a show home, like, stone bench tops or polished concrete floors, the normal upgrade stuff, the actual building of the home at a baseline performance was no more per square foot than what we were going to build previously and what we'd been building. So we're sitting here going, this is not right. This can't be right. We can build these homes for the same cost per square foot or per square meter in Australia. They're three times more efficient, where consumers are just walking in the door. Like, we opened the door, consumers just walked in. So what's going on here? I was signing a contract with some people once. I just said to them, guys, can I ask you a question? Why did you sign with us? And they went, oh, because of green homes. I assumed what they meant was because they wanted to build a sustainable home. That's not what they meant. What they meant was, they signed with Green Homes because of the Green Homes company. which didn't exist. So I said to them, I said, yeah, what do you mean? And they said, oh, well, it's just so good that you're a part of Green Homes now, that your company's a part of Green Homes. And I went, I am Green Homes. We are Green Homes. And they went, oh, yeah, we know that you're Green Homes here locally, but, like, it's just such a great brand. This is the brand. I invented the brand. There is no brand.
You're at the headquarters.
We didn't have a website. Yeah. We didn't have anything. We just had this great signage and a great logo that we hadn't even trademarked.
So you were the first company in Australia to have the name Green Homes, because it's like, it's almost like you put up a sign saying hot dogs. Just those two words alone created that line around the corner of people saying, I want one of those, without even necessarily knowing what it entails.
That's exactly what happened, Andy.
Wow.
So I got onto our attorney and said, can we register Green Homes? And they went, no, no. He said, well, they're descriptive words, green and homes. You know, sure enough, we registered it, got approved. We trademarked it. We opened a company called Green Homes. We started building homes in 2007. You know, we did nearly 100 homes, 100 projects.
Masterclass in branding. I love it.
By default, I didn't do any branding. This is totally 100% consumer driven. Then we won HIA Home of the Year. That was a massive pivot moment for us. It's like winning the National Association of Home Builders Home of the Year.
Wow.
So I got all this national press, and it wasn't about being green. It was like, how the hell did this nobody builder win Home of the Year? And I went, well, we must have built the best home, because I didn't pay for the award. I didn't sponsor the awards. We just put an application in, and we built some great homes. So I wrote an ebook called An Idiot's Guide on How to Build a Green Home. We built a website using a tool. I got someone to build a website. We sold that ebook back when you could sell ebooks for $19.95, and we were selling 600 a month.
So were you thinking at the time, oh, we're on to something here and we're going to be the leader? And or were you just thinking, this knowledge has to get out there? We're going to help people out and make $20 in the process.
The ebooks will pay for our Christmas party at the end of the year. That was my thought.
So
2009.
There's so many things I want to ask you, but to tie back to the disaster piece too. So the first one is, why aren't the big players leading the charge with resilient building right now? Why is it the small players who have to fight for years to get into that and to get it into the market?
For a large building company to reinvent and build sustainable homes, they have to go and build the homes, understand the base data, design the homes first, understand the base data, form the relationships, understand how to have those conversations and build that credibility. That's a 10-year process at a minimum, right? The faster option for them is, let's just buy land and build the homes the way we want to build them, and people will buy them.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to focus on sustainability. We'll just build homes, meet the code, the minimum code, whatever that is, and sell them. And if people want to live there, we'll pick locations where there's a housing shortage and there's expansion, and we just sell that. That's, they just build to the baseline. The fundamental process of building sustainable, you can find that on the internet, but packaging that into a brand and building consumer credibility takes time, and big building companies just don't have that time. They right. just don't have that time.
Hey, Mick, I want to kind of dig a little bit into the nuts and bolts of the sustainable building designs that you guys use, because there's some technologies that a lot of people they might have heard, you know, lip service, ICF, insulated concrete forms, or SIPS panels, structural insulated panels. Is there anything, I know that the design in Oregon is going to be different from Texas, but is there design principles or technologies that you use no matter where you are that people should be familiar with?
Oh, absolutely. I think globally, you know, solar passive design is important. It doesn't matter whether you live in Arizona or, you know, Washington State.
And that's architectural. I mean, we're talking the design of the home, not the materials, just pure.
The materials have little to do with it. So I can tell you that of all the homes that we're doing, we're not using SIP panels. We're not 3D printing homes. We're not building modular homes. I mean, all of that can be done. We're building homes traditionally. All of the manufacturers in the world today are on a sustainable journey, some more than others. Some have got, you know, recycled water in their manufacturing plant, and some have got sustainable products that are ticking the boxes. The objective for us of building a sustainable home is making sure that the home fundamentally reduces its energy use. Now, the energy use that we're seeing across our projects, and we've got live data from multiple projects globally, At a baseline, our homes, our designs, and our homes are delivering a 72% on average decrease in energy use to normal data. So then if we've got that other 30% or other 28% of energy, if we supplement that with a solar battery and solar system, and it can be a small system. On average, our systems are our upgrade systems are just 6.6 kilowatts, which is a pretty small system. That home is energy neutral, effectively off the grid. No
Wow.
carbon, no carbon emissions from that home in operation. It's that simple.
In Australia, your major disaster category, I believe, is wildfires, right?
Correct.
What, if anything, do you do acknowledging that threat?
My first message is when we do a rebuild, if we're doing a rebuild, let's do it sustainably and make sure the home's efficient and uses less energy. We do use products. We are using concrete wall products and products that are highly resistant to wildfires. What's interesting is it was perceived by many people, many councils and architects and developers that a BAL 30, BAL 35, BAL 40 homes, so highly, in flame zone areas, can't be sustainable. We've built many, designed and built many homes in flame zone, which is the highest bushfire attack rating, that are energy neutral.
Why the misconception? What did policymakers or government officials get wrong about
Oh, they're idiots. They don't understand.
that?
Look, I could give you a heap of examples. Let's just cut straight. They're idiots. They don't know.
It's funny, but it's also disheartening that these people all over the globe are potentially the people who are also preventing the innovation.
Here's the thing. We stopped trying to educate the planners and the policymakers. It's just a waste of time. We are global leaders in understanding how to build, design, and deliver sustainable homes. And I can tell you that it can be done anywhere, regardless of the location, the flame zone. We know that we can build sustainability homes in Tornado Alley. Those conditions and codes have no bearing of the effect on how well we can build those homes. And I think that when we look at the affordability of living in those homes, so we talk about the affordability of the energy costs or utility costs, and then the health benefits. So, there's a movement on about healthy homes and healthy spaces. Well, that only comes from building sustainably. There are 100 million homes in the US that have got another 30 to 50 years of life that are completely inefficient and not healthy. Those homes need to be upgraded. There's no contractors that'll do it. Everyone, no one, everyone just goes, "Oh, it's too hard."
One of the things that we do at Build SOS is we are constantly drumming that drum to our contractor base of you can build resilient communities and you can build your business at the same time. These aren't mutually exclusive things.
You touched on something that's really catapulted us here in Australia, is insurance companies have gone, "We want our asset that we're insuring to be sustainable. We want it to be low energy. We want it to be a higher value asset."
Do the insurance companies pass that on to the consumer? So is my insurance premium going to be lower if it's a green home?
Here it is.
Okay.
And I believe that that will happen there, right? So I've always thought that America led the way and everyone else followed. I can tell you in this particular space, America's 10 years behind everyone else, but they're catching up fast.
How would you advise that we take the successes that you have had in the sustainable building market and apply them to the resilient world?
The main point is removing the hurdles, the invisible hurdles that a building industry has created, where the contractors and the industry is going, "Oh no, it's too expensive. All we're focused on now is getting you back into a home, rebuilding your home. I don't want to overcomplicate it by making it sustainable," right? That's the thinking. Well, the actual reality is that the sustainability piece doesn't complicate it anymore because it's not that hard. So we've got to get communities to understand that, by not adopting that and not thinking like that, you're actually putting yourself at a disadvantage. It's not adding time or cost to rebuilds. It's not adding time or cost to renovations or remodels. It's actually doing what needs to be done in today's environment. It's not hard or difficult. It's just that your contractor needs to understand the basic principles. Now, we need to make that easy for them. That's the challenge, is making it easy. Again, we're dealing with contractors and builders that are looking for that, right? The biggest challenge that we've got is educating contractors that aren't looking for it, that are closed off to it because they've heard for years and years and years that sustainability is difficult and expensive, and they relate it to technology. One of the other things that we constantly battle is that people think that an automated home is a green home. No, it's not. You can automate a home, but that doesn't mean it's green just because you can turn your lights off on your phone. There's a whole heap of misconceptions that need to be cleared out, right? And we need to remove the hurdles so people go, right, I'm going to act now and make my home sustainable, energy, and resilient. Or when I do my rebuild, there's been a catastrophic event, right, my rebuild's going to be energy efficient, sustainable. So for the next 25 years, or my journey in this home is going to be, affordable, healthy, low impact to the environment. I'm going to be in a better community of surrounding homes. That's the journey that, and I'm very passionate about that.
The end game, I mean, of what you just described, I would say it sells itself because, of course, everybody wants to pay less. Of course, everybody wants to live in a healthier home. Of course, everybody wants their insurance premiums lower and, all of
Sure.
that. But you do a great job selling it. I'm sold.
Our idea of going into America was that we would partner with a large company that says, right, we're doing, whatever we're doing, and we're going to also run this green homes builder business, and we're going to grow it nationally. We just haven't found that partnership. One of the challenges that we've got, and this is a little bit off topic, is that America's very much about made in America, They don't think that just because we've built 10,000 energy efficient neutral homes in Australia and New Zealand, that we can actually do it in the US, right? So this whole made in America, buy from your own tribe is preventing, that culture is preventing this part of the problem when it comes to us, right? I'll say something else. One of the challenges that we need to eliminate, and I'm going to say it here for all of the listeners, is that when you think about affordability and living in a home and lowering your energy utility cost to, a third or 20% or zero, most people think, oh yeah, but it costs a lot on the front end. I spend an extra 40 or 50,000 on the front end to get that. It doesn't add up. That's not true. That is misleading. It's false information. You can do it by spending zero on the front end, just by planning your project correctly, and you can have a massive uplift on the back end. This whole illusion of people going, contractors and industry and all sorts of other people going, oh, anyone can build a sustainable home, but it's going to cost you more money. It'll cost you a couple of hundred thousand dollars more. Sure, you have no energy bills, but you've paid for it at the front end. That's not right. That is an illusion. That might have been like it in the 70s or the 80s when the products didn't exist and the technology didn't exist. I can tell you today that the cost of building a home per square foot does not change. You can make that home 70% more efficient just by planning it well and following a couple of simple processes.
This is perfect timing because I actually am about to build and I am going to halt everything that I'm doing because I too have fallen into that area of misinformation because I assumed if I put in an extra $100,000 I could get this net zero home and I'm like, well, for me it just doesn't pencil out at the moment, but if it's not true
So
and
just to jump in there, Evan, what people they think to create that, they have to upgrade all these systems and pro sure, that costs money, but you can achieve it just by choosing the right design, the right orientation, following the right principles of construction, fundamental stuff, you can achieve it.
We
Absolutely.
have wildfires and hurricanes that wipe out entire communities, and what better way to come back than to not have utility bills, to live in a healthy home, to build it,
100%.
more resilient. So we'll look forward to partnering with you, and then in the future, and
Absolutely.
I got to get your to Tennessee. We'll have to beep that out, but.
Yep. Evan, you've got my email. Let's work out how we can make it happen so you can get a sustainable home. And Andy, assuming we're at the end of the podcast, great to catch up with you.
Yes.
It'd be great to work out how SOS and Green Homes, GH Builders can work together. On changing the industry.
I've got lots of ideas. I'm sure we'll talk more after offline.
Yeah, great.
All
Well, you
right.
get to
Thanks
go
so
get a
much, Luke.
coffee and we get to go to sleep. So
Yeah, you guys knock off for the day. I've got a full day in front of me. So
good on you.
thank you so
Yeah.
much.
Good
Make it's
luck,
been
guys.
great.
Thanks.
Talk soon.
All
Bye.
right. Cheers. Well, that was something.
Whoa. That blew my mind, man. I 100% have fallen victim to this notion that you gotta, spend more to save more down the, and that there's even terminology to it's like it's a 20-year payback or that's a 15-year payback. And are you really gonna live in your house for 10 to 15 to, are you kidding me? A net zero home for the same amount
Yeah.
that you know is gonna be, and one thing we didn't get into is when you build a home to the specifications that get you those numbers, it's gonna be a tighter, stronger home. So it actually just inherently is more storm, fire resistant and more resilient to all those things because everything is just tighter. He's talking about taking standards up, not even a huge amount, it sounds like, just to get that resiliency. And once you start with the right design, the rest of it falls into place. It's, I mean, my brain is exploding right now.
He's fighting the same fight that we're fighting Build SOS. It's a different flavor, but it's the exact same thing. And it was just amazing to hear from him how he said he fell backwards into this amazing situation. And he's for 20 years, he's taken it and run with it. And every time he turns around to a new market, he's like, where's my competition? Why isn't somebody doing this yet? I mean, it's amazing. It's just incredible.
Green homes that don't cost a penny more to build. I mean, that's just still, it's still, I'm really struggling to believe this because
Yeah.
he's right. We have been conditioned to believe it. And that's why I am now determined to do my build in Tennessee this way. And I'm going to pause everything. I swear I'm doing it right now. I'm pausing everything until I can get this underfoot because there's no reason not to.
Yep. Amazing.
Anyway.
All right. Well, thanks. Late night,
Yep.
time to go to bed.
Almost midnight.
I'll see you later.
Hey, thanks for listening to Disaster Diaries. And if you're moved by these stories, please like, subscribe, leave a review. That will really help us. And also, please share the show with somebody that you think needs it. To tell your own story, download the Disaster Diaries app, available at all app stores, or visit disasterdiaries.com. And if you're looking for help rebuilding, check out buildsos.com for support, tools, and resources to help you better prepare for, respond to, and recover from disasters. Hey there. Just a reminder that this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not legal, financial, or insurance advice. Disaster Diaries and Build SOS do not endorse any specific products, services, methods, or guest viewpoints discussed here. So please always consult qualified professionals for decisions related to disaster preparedness, construction, or insurance.